Hi everyone, I'm Brian Peters and this is The Science of Social Media, a podcast by Buffer, your weekly sandbox for social media stories, insights, experimentation, and learning.
Welcome to episode number 115. I'm Haley Griffiths and this week we're nerding out over neuromarketing and how you can use it to get better results from your social media marketing for your brand and business. And don't worry, we will give you a better explanation of what neuromarketing is before we dive in.
Yes, we will. And we got such a strong response from listeners that loved hearing about psychology back in episode number 107. So let's get started going over another bit of marketing science. So, neuromarketing sounds pretty complicated, right?
I mean, it honestly does. I was a little bit nervous when we were putting this show together. But we've learned a lot about neuromarketing and we're here to break it down for you and of course give you a few ideas and examples to incorporate into your own social media marketing.
I think the best place to start with any new concept is a strong definition. So here's a quick definition for you. Neuromarketing is when neuropsychology is applied to marketing research. In practice, this might look like studying a person's cognitive response to viewing ads or product packaging.
Exactly. The whole point is to understand the reasoning why people make the purchasing decisions that they do and how they respond to marketing. And then, of course, use that knowledge to get better at marketing your own products or services.
And if you haven't heard of neuromarketing before, don't worry. It's actually an emerging field in marketing. The term neuromarketing was first published in 2002, but there's research that goes all the way back to 1990.
So you might be asking yourself why we need to jump on this complex scientific train and really, there are a lot of benefits to neuromarketing for social media managers. Marketing campaigns and strategies can become more efficient and effective, and ultimately, you can align your marketing with the true needs and wants of your potential customers because you're starting to understand how your customer's brain works.
One of the more traditional ways to use neuromarketing is when it comes to product design and choices. Brands like Campbell's Soup and Frito-Lay have used neuromarketing to redesign their packaging and make it more appealing.
Yeah, and PayPal used neuromarketing to learn that their commercials that focused on speed and convenience triggered a significantly higher response than the commercials that they were advertising for safety and security. So PayPal wound up developing an entirely new ad campaign based on those neuromarketing results.
Yeah, I actually kind of remember someone, was it like an Ad Week or something a while back?
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you can best leverage neuromarketing to be an even better social media marketer. Well, there are two ways to go about neuromarketing. First is to conduct your own studies on people that are your target audience. And second is to read and learn everything you can about general neuromarketing best practices that apply to most people.
If you're a team of one, like many social media managers are, then we totally understand that you'll probably want to stick with learning from others and applying the broad lessons. Whereas if you're at a larger company and have a bit of a budget, then maybe doing your own neuromarketing studies might make sense.
Yes, and I wish we could do our own neuromarketing studies, but we rely on the wisdom and general guidance of others.
Yes, we do.
Which is in bed, yes. We'll go over a little bit of both of these options for you today. So let's start with what we can learn from big studies. There's a book about neuromarketing called Brain Fluence by Roger Dooley. It's a great read if you like what we're talking about here on the show. We're going to go over a few of those practical techniques that he talks about for convincing and persuading customers.
First up, one of the things he talks about is the fonts that you use. And I'm already going on a side tangent here, but have you noticed how passionate some people can get about fonts, Brian?
Yeah, I remember when we were like choosing the new fonts for our blog, it took a long time because, you know, there's serif, there's sans serif, which one reads easier, which one do people stick around for longer? So there's a lot of actual science that goes into it.
Yeah, and a lot of strong opinions.
Yes.
Well, in Brain Fluence, Dooley shares experiments completed by the University of Michigan, and they show that people can truly be affected by a simple versus a complex font. So ultimately, they discovered that if you need to convince a customer to perform a task, then you should describe that task in a simple and easy to read font.
It is pretty wild how powerful a simple font can be. Now, of course, as social media managers, we should all be aiming to share designs on social that are in an easy to read font. Another one to remember this for is for surveys. And I know a lot of social media managers who love surveys, and it'll be a good practice, you know, from now on to make sure that the instructions for the survey are simplified. So you'll actually have more people to fill it out. Well, hopefully.
Hopefully. So simple fonts are great for getting people to perform a task, but don't give up on complex fonts just yet. It turns out that complex fonts help to boost memory recall. So if you're using a complex font, someone is more likely to remember what you wrote, and it'll likely be grabbing their attention visually as well.
Wait, so Haley, what is the definition of a complex font?
I think that we've all seen them. They're the really swirly ones that are super beautiful, but not really practical to use for more than one word at a time, right? Because it would just be too difficult to read. So sort of like a very fancy serif or the really highly designed fonts that are very swirly.
Got it. And then for everybody listening who's not, that aren't quite sure what a serif or a sans serif is. So a serif is what you might imagine with like a Times New Roman, where it has at the end of each little point of the font, there's like lines that go up or down or sideways. So it kind of gives it the shape. Whereas sans serif is much more popular today. You might have heard of like Open Sans, where it's pretty much just flat and simple around the letters. And so, you know, quick differential there.
Yeah, that's a good one. We use a lot of Open Sans at Buffer.
Yes, we do. I think our Open Sans is like our official font, I think. but, you know, going back to our point, so don't go off the rails writing everything in complex fonts just yet. This tactic is best used sparingly and for important information only. So now that we have fonts taken care of, let's talk about images. James Breeze, an Australian usability specialist quoted in Dooley's Brainfluence, studied how people view ads with babies. And he learned that people who are looking at the ad will look at what the person in the ad is looking at.
So if the baby is looking at a box of diapers, then the person viewing the ad is also looking at the box of diapers. But this works for more than just babies. If you are using images of people or even animals, pay careful attention to where they're looking in the image because it will more than likely be the focus of your customer's attention. So this is important when you're doing ads and you're creating, you know, visual designs with ads and other things you might share on social.
That is pretty interesting. So yeah, just if you are including people in your advertisements. And I remember another good lesson from this book is something we've chatted about on the podcast a ton before, and that's trust. Trust is, of course, crucial to many parts of businesses. And it turns out the key to obtaining your customers' trust is to have them feel trusted as well. Here are a few ways outlined in the book for making your customers feel trusted. First is to offer a trial with few restrictions. Second is to establish credit without long forms or a lengthy screening process. And then finally, third, to provide confidential information without making a prospect or customer sign an NDA, which is a non-disclosure agreement.
All right. So last but not least, while we're looking at learning from neuromarketing, let's look at smiling. We've talked about smiling and emojis back in episode number 107, so definitely check that out if this sounds interesting to you. The findings are sort of what you'd expect. If you use a photo of someone smiling, then it's mood boosting for the person looking at that photo. And that little mood boost can affect your customer's willingness to spend money.
Ooh, a little mood boost. So the next time you're grabbing an image, whether you have a bunch of photos of your teammates, which is what we have at Buffer, or maybe you use a site like Unsplash, be on the lookout for people who are happy and smiling to use in your marketing materials.
All right, now that we've talked about what we can learn from general neuromarketing lessons, let's talk a bit about what it's like to do your own neuromarketing experiments. Now, there are a range of options here, and they go from fairly affordable to extremely expensive medical equipment. So, of course, you're in the best place to judge what level of neuromarketing you'd like to do.
Let's start with the most affordable, and then the prices will increase with each new method we talk about. So this first method is called eye tracking, which is used to tell marketers where the attention of someone goes when they look at something, like on your website or in real life. The really basic method of eye tracking is actually more like mouse tracking, and it's something you might know in the marketing industry as heat mapping. This is when you're able to see a map of where people are all primarily looking at when they look at your images or website. And there are a ton of tools out there that let you do this pretty easily, and they can be actually affordable as well, depending on what you're looking for. A few options here at Buffer that are our favorites are Crazy Egg, One Word, Zoho, and Mouseflow.
Yeah, and we've used a couple of them for heat mapping. It's always neat to see what comes up. So the other way to do eye tracking involves a little bit more equipment, and the idea is that you can team up with researchers who have glasses that have integrated cameras in them or screens that have eye trackers on them. And then the researcher is able to track the eye movements of the participant while they're watching an ad or looking at any other marketing content. And then the idea here is that once you know where someone's attention on the ad is directed, you can change the way that texts and images are placed to make it the most effective.
Yeah, and actually I've done these studies before, and it's pretty interesting because you'll spend like, you know, days or weeks focusing on a certain part of your website, and then you'll test it with your users only to find out that when they come to your site, they don't even look at that part at all.
So disappointing, but very important to learn.
Right. It's like, it's disappointing, but you're like, okay, well, at least now we know, right?
So, yeah.
And then another type of neuromarketing research you can do is called facial coding. And again, this involves some equipment. Essentially, you get a specific software that assesses the movement of someone's facial features to measure if they are reacting positively or negatively to what they are seeing.
This is pretty cool because so much research shows that having either a positive or negative ad, something that really evokes emotion, is bound to impact its effectiveness and as a byproduct, your sales. Of course, something to mention with both this method and the eye tracking is that not only do you need the equipment and the researcher to do the study, but you also need a bunch of participants to do this. And that's going to apply to the next couple of methods that we're going to give here too. So just as an FYI, this is a big investment of time.
Now, moving down the levels of neuromarketing, we're at the spot where people go to a whole other level and start tracking the brain activity of their potential customers. Don't worry, you don't have to do this, but we can still kind of give you an idea of what you would learn if you did. So one of the ways to do this is using EEG, and I'm going to try to pronounce this word, so bear with me, electroencephalography.
Nice.
EEG uses electrodes to measure electrical waves produced by the brain and allows researchers to track instinctual emotions like anger, excitement, sorrow, and lust. The one thing that EEG is critiqued for, however, is that it doesn't grant researchers access to the deeper parts of the brain where the pleasure center, quote unquote, is located. And of course, that could be a pretty big deal for your marketing.
Okay, last but certainly not least is the most expensive way to do neuromarketing research, and this is using fMRI or functional magnetic resonance imaging. Using fMRI means through the help of powerful magnets, researchers are able to track the brain's blood flow as subjects respond to audio and visual cues. This is where that pleasure center that Brian just mentioned comes into play because it allows examiners to access this deep part of the brain and it lets marketers know how people are really responding to their work.
And while this sounds like a dream for most marketers, fMRI is not only extremely expensive, obviously, but pretty inconvenient for participants. The equipment is up to $1,000 per machine per hour to operate, and your participants have to lie completely still in the machine while doing the tests.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound like too much fun, but it is in the name of marketing.
Yes, in the name of science and marketing. You know, I don't see us doing any fMRIs here at Buffer, but it is wild to think that there are companies out there doing this. Right. And we're over here with our surveys trying to figure out.
I mean, if you've done fMRIs or any of these more expensive types of neuromarketing, please send us a tweet and tell us about your experience and just use the hashtag Buffer Podcast so all the other listeners can learn a little bit about this too.
Yes, absolutely. And is that a form of neuromarketing that we just did on people?
I don't know. Is it?
Could be. Anyways, it's fun. It's fun regardless.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Science of Social Media today. The show notes for this episode are now available on the Buffer blog at blog.buffer.com with a complete transcript. And if you ever want to get in touch with Brian or myself, maybe to chat with us about some neuromarketing methods that you're using, we are always here for you on social media. Just use the hashtag Buffer Podcast, or you can send an email to hello@buffer.com.
Yes, we would love to hear from you. And thanks to everyone tuning into our show every single week. I was just looking at a map of which countries our downloads come from. And it was super exciting to see that we do reach thousands of people in countries around the world. So it's an honor and privilege to be here with you all today. And yeah, thanks for joining the Science of Social Media. Lots more to come in the remainder of 2018. So stay tuned until next Monday.